Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework people. Mm-hmm. Stitch Hour tonight. I have no idea what we're going to do. We're it'll be some one or all of us doing a stitch and chat of some kind. And there's potential for a guest and blah, blah. Don't know, but we'll be there. So join us at 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel. It's like last Wednesday, it was just going to be Jennifer and me. And then as the afternoon unfolded, Gayanne Rogers joined us. And so we had a terrific show with Gayanne Rogers. So something will happen at 8 o'clock, and it'll involve stitching and talking.
Yep. Yay.
I do want to again say, I think I mentioned that on the Stitch Hour last week, thanks to everybody who's made suggestions for potential guests. The well of guests kind of ebbs and flows throughout the year and through the years. And I had kind of hit a dry spot and really just didn't have ideas and was really struggling to find people and struggling to get people scheduled. And several people have come through with a number of names, and now the schedule is building up and actually working toward getting all of the ones recorded all the way through till January. So thanks to everybody for suggestions. If you, you know, hear someone or do a class with someone you think might be an interesting guest, let me know. Happy to have the suggestions. Understand if they never show up that there's a variety of reasons. Sometimes I just decide that they're not going to make a good guest. A lot of times, more times than you'd imagine, they just simply don't respond. It's 2, maybe 3 out of 10 people actually respond to say yes or no. So it takes a bunch just to get the ones that we get. But really appreciate people sending in suggestions because it does help. And if I don't respond, don't take it personal. And if the person never shows up, there's so many factors involved that it's again, don't take it personal. But I appreciate the suggestions. And this time we've kind of hit a mother load, and I got a bunch of them lined up. So really appreciate it. Big, big help.
That's great.
And so we're working on the – oh, so Sunday – speaking of that, Sunday's show is Michael Cook. And I say this with every show, but you do not want to miss this. Michael Cook lives in Texas, and he raises silkworms and collects the silk from the cocoons.
Cool.
And he tells how that gets done and how he learned to do it and the whole bit. And it is absolutely riveting. And you want to obviously listen to the thing, but wormspit.com. The word worm and the worm spit put together, wormspit.com is his website. And if you go there, he has pictures and captions that take you all the way through the process, explain why he raises the moss that he does raise, and shows others that produce silk. And it's absolutely fascinating stuff. So invite you to go to his website and then definitely listen to the podcast Sunday this coming Sunday because he's just a fascinating guy, really great stuff. So that was a good one. Yep. And great. Last Wednesday's show with Gayanne Rogers. Once again.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Now, you know, some people will go, all right, Gayanne Rogers, counted cross stitch. I don't care. I do cross or counted canvas work. I do cross stitch. I do embroidery. I do black work. I don't care. When Gayanne Rogers is involved, even if you don't do the technique or have no interest in counted canvas work, Gayanne Rogers is worth every minute of your time because of what you'll learn about color and threads.
Right.
Every time. It's, yeah.
Right, because what she says applies to any form of needlework.
Right. Yeah, and she is just an absolute treasure. You know what she knows and what she can do. So she takes us through. The reason she showed up on the show is she had heard from some people about working with the colors that they had gotten the packages from Needle in a Haystack, who's sponsoring the Saint-Tropez project. and needing help on that. So she did the show and kind of helped, actually not kind of helped, was a huge help in terms of how you decide what colors to use where, and, you know, the freedom to change and try. And another thing that came out of that afternoon last Wednesday is we've set up a group, a Facebook group, Saint-Tropez Stitch Group, Mystery and Saint-Tropez Stitch Group, that so people can post pictures, ask questions. Gayan has been very active in that group, and already we've seen quite a bit, learned quite a bit in that thing. And even if you're not doing the Mystery in Saint-Tropez, join the group. You'll learn something about color, I guarantee you. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've already, I'm working on, you know, I started the big one, but I've been kind of working on the ornament, and I started working on the diagonal, the long diagonal stitches.
Uh-huh.
And I think I've already tried 3 different colors.
Yep.
And 2 different kinds of thread.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, when she kept saying it, you know, if you don't like it, cut it out. Yep.
Yeah. I'm on my 3rd try for that center square. Yep. With the over dye. Now I did the one on the, Congress cloth linen, and I just didn't feel like stitching. It's beautiful cloth, but really I'm glad I bought it. I bought a bunch of it, and I'm glad I did, 'cause I'll use it. But for needle point type stitches, I just didn't want to be careful. I wanted to be able to pull. So right. I moved to regular Congress cloth, and with the over dye, I stitched that center square. And when I got done, there was spacing between the threads, and obviously I saw that as I was stitching. But I thought, oh, when I get done and get my head back out from from the magnifier, it'll be fine. And I got it done. I got that section done, and then I had to go away. And I came back, and I didn't like it. You know, there was just too much space between threads. So
were you using just one thread?
Yeah, I used just one thread.
Oh, so you'll have to use 2.
Right, and see on the Congress cloth, it was perfect. It was one thread, one strand was absolutely spot on, nice. You know, the threads laid right next to each other just beautifully. But on regular canvas Congress cloth, it causes too much gap. And I'm sure that's because the ground cloth threads won't collapse at all.
Right.
And so it was separating the threads, and I thought, oh, it'll be okay. And then there's some things you put over it, and I thought, you know, it'll collapse down. It'll be fine. But it's not going to be fine. So, so on the side, I got 2 strands and stitched, you know, a couple, 3 rows. Sure enough, that's what I need. So now I've torn that out. And so now a 3rd time, I will stitch the center core. And this time I think it'll stay. But again, what was ringing in my head throughout that whole thing is Gayan Rogers, you know, just rip it out and do it till you like it. And that's what I'm doing. So. Yeah, some people have made great progress. One person posted she'd done the whole piece. Holy smokes, yeah. Beautiful work people are doing.
Oh, yeah. And it is interesting and I think we'll see a whole lot more of this as the word about the Facebook group gets out and people post. It's really a lot of fun to see the different colors. And I'm really anxious to see what Beth is doing with hers.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I am too. Yep. No, that's the fun. Well, in last Wednesday's show, Jennifer had hers out. Right. And I mean, that center square, she nailed that. And so then now what's she going to do beyond that? Yeah, and she's committed. She's committed. She's not going to buy one thread for this project. It's going to come out of her stash no matter what. So
yeah, that's what I'm trying to do too.
Yeah.
But I've already had to borrow a thread from somebody else because she just happened to have exactly the right color.
Uh huh. Yep. I think Jennifer's going to move a mountain before she buys the threads. So
yeah.
Yeah. She can be bullheaded like that. So we'll see how that comes out. That's, But that's the fun. You know, that's so much fun. Everybody with a different approach and how they do it. And there's so many options for combining colors that it's just interesting to see how it all comes out. It really is. So.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, because so many people are unaccustomed, like Gayanne said, you know, people want to do it just like she does it. That's kind of the mindset that most people seem to have. And they're paralyzed when it comes to choosing colors or changing a thread or, you know, doing something that the teacher didn't do.
Right.
It's terrifying for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with doing it the way the designer did it. You know, if you like it, do it that way. But
yeah. No, we here in America, we're trained to follow instructions.
Yeah, right. And if you do something that's different, it's not different, it's wrong.
Yep. Well, yeah, that's that whole education system. Because when I talked to Sarah Dennis this past Sunday, we talked about that. I think we talked about it in the show. We certainly talked about it afterwards, how in the UK and in generally in Europe, you know, their approach is complete opposite. You know, do your own design, create your own, put your own colors together. They really don't think much about grabbing a chart and following it. Or if they do, they change it. It's a different mindset than we have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which is better, but,
probably neither one.
Yeah.
You know, is what works for you,
yeah,
for the individual person.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot to be said for, I really like that kit. I like those colors. I want to buy it and I want to stitch it and I want to hang it on the wall and go for it. You know?
Right.
Yeah. A lot to be said.
Don't
for that.
Beat yourself up if it doesn't look exactly like the model.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it's the way you've stitched it or, you know, if you made a mistake someplace or, you know, whatever it happens to be, you know, it's going to be, well, especially since the photographs on the patterns are never true to color.
Right.
You know, so there's always going to be that, you know, it's not going to look exactly the same as whatever's on the front of your pattern because of the whole photography, you know, getting the colors right.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing, but this Mystery in Saint-Tropez is a real opportunity to, at several levels. If you've never done counted canvas work, they're very simple stitches, and you'll have a lot of fun. And Kathy Ray has put together several color combinations, all of them at work. And if you just simply do that because you want to take a try at counted canvas work, it'll work out perfect. Just execute it, and you'll be happy with the result. But then if you want to play with colors, if you want to monkey around with stitches, different threads, whatever, it offers opportunities at all those levels. And that Facebook group, now Gayanne is watching that, and so if you need help, you're in it stuck, want some suggestions, she won't tell you what to do. She'll just give you suggestions. She'll be there, so join that group. But yeah, give it a try. A lot of people have never tried kind of canvas work, and it is, that's my favorite, so.
Yeah, mine too.
Hey, speaking of teachers, Hazel Blomkamp.
Yes.
That class happened here just recently?
Yes. After the national seminar, I don't know if she had anything in between the national seminar and our class, but she, for the Heartland region, she did one of her tumbleweeds projects, which is surface embroidery, which is what she does. And it's really pretty pale pinks and pale greens and cream colors and a kind of a cruel work floral design. And I took the class because Hazel Blomkamp, you know,
take
the opportunity when you can. But as it turned out, her visa never came through.
Jeez.
So she wound up having to do national seminar by Zoom. And I heard from somebody else that they had a little bit of technical trouble at the beginning, it took them a couple hours to figure that out. But once they got everything, all the bugs worked out, it went really well. And here, so the class was limited to 25 people and it was full. But because she was doing Zoom, about half of the people decided, heck, I don't have to travel. I'll just do it from home.
Yeah.
And so we had, I think, about 15 people in the class.
Oh, right. All in the same room.
In the face-to-face. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I live in Coralville and it was in Cedar Rapids. I just drove back and forth. That's a half hour drive for me. And then she was at home in South Africa on Zoom, and it went really, really well.
Well, that's great. And just
and she's a character.
Yeah. I was just going to say, for people who don't know Hazel Blomkamp, and you go surface embroidery, oh, I have no interest in that. Look up Hazel Blomkamp. I did a show with her maybe a couple years ago.
Yes.
And she's got several books. Look her up, Hazel Blomkamp, Blomkamp. Listen to the show. Yeah, she's a blast. She is one treat of a woman to listen to and to talk to. She is something else, yes. Yeah.
So surface embroidery is totally not my thing.
Uh-huh.
But I've done it. But, you know, there was, I like the pattern. I like the design. And, you know, I learned something new.
Yep.
So it was a 3-day class. We had 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, each of those 3 days. So 6 contact hours each day. And it was we were working the whole time. Now, she did not have us work on the piece. She had us work on a doodle cloth.
Oh.
And we just do circles on it. And in the instructions that she said ahead of time, she said to get a heat erasable pen. So those are like the Pilot friction pens. Are you familiar with those?
No.
It's FRIXION. Friction, as in you remove the mark with friction.
Okay.
Which creates heat. So the end of the pen has a kind of a soft-ish plastic nub on it. And you rub the ink with that and it creates heat through the friction and the line disappears.
Huh. And it literally, now, all right, now back up. 'Cause I hate writing on canvas with even of a hard pencil. I just hate it. 'Cause I know that graphite is going to get dragged in into the thread fibers. So it's FRIXION. All right. Friction pens.
I'm pretty sure it's Pilot. I don't think it's Pentel.
Okay.
But just Google friction, FRIXION, and you'll find it. And she said get a 7.7 millimeter or a 0.5 would work too, but the 0.7 is the finer one.
Okay.
Or maybe it's 0.7 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Now, yeah. You know, these like water soluble or erasable or whatever pens, you know, there's several different options. And so often people complain that the line doesn't come completely out. Does it with this?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you how you get it out.
Okay.
Because you don't use the eraser part of it.
Okay.
So people in the class were asking me, the person was sitting next to me, she says, where did you get that? Because I went to Joann's and Hobby Lobby and they didn't have them. You get them in the office supply stores.
Okay.
And I knew that because I have one for another reason. I have a little notepad that is an erasable kind of a thing. You use one of these friction pens with it and then you can take a photo of the page with your phone. It has a QR code on it.
Uh-huh.
And then it uploads your notes into a notepad so that you can, you know, put them in a word processing program or something
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little one that I take notes at, you know, A&G meetings or whatever. And you can either use water to wipe the pages off, or you can use the pen to erase them. But, you know, if you've written a lot, it takes forever to use the pen to erase it. So you just use a little bit of water with a microfiber cloth to wipe it off. So I've had one for quite a while. I knew what they were. So we talked about this at the class, because what she had us do is draw circles or other shapes on our doodle cloth. And somebody said, you know, well, does this come out? So I've seen other people, other stitchers, talk about these heat erasable pens. And somebody said that, yes, heat erases the ink, but if the piece gets cold, the color will come back. So I don't know why you would be getting your needlework piece cold, but, you know, for, I don't know, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, the heat goes out, you know, in the winter. And but she said that she tried it. She, you know, made a line or circle. I don't know what she did, but she erased it with, and she uses hairdryer.
Okay.
Or you can use an iron, but hairdryer works good, and you don't have to actually come into contact with your piece with a hairdryer. So, you know, put it on a low velocity and just, you know, use it until the line disappears or whatever you can see of the line. Obviously, you really want to cover your lines.
Yeah,
but
yeah, sure.
The heat, you know, will make the line go away. So then she said that people talk about, well, you know, what's going to happen to the fabric in 100 years with that line on it. She says, I don't care. I won't be here. So she's not thinking about heirlooms.
No. Yep. There you go.
So the project that we did had needle lace, which is basically done by doing detached buttonhole,
mm-hmm.
which I've done before, but I haven't done it for a long, long time. And I had the same problem that I have with everything else. My tension is too tight.
Yeah.
So
that's the same problem I have. Yep. I can't get sloppy enough.
Yeah. And so that's something that I'll have to practice before I even come near the actual piece.
Yeah.
And she had several different patterns using detached buttonhole.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them had some open areas that you could thread a silk ribbon through or a little twisted cord, you know, so she talked about making the twisted cord. And the silk ribbon, have you talked to Di Van Niekerk?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's her silk ribbons.
Oh.
So, you know, there's not a lot in there. There's maybe a foot of silk ribbon, you know.
Yeah, that's, I'm guessing that's probably some of the best silk ribbon in the world in terms of.
I think so. Yeah.
Quality and color options. And yeah. Di Van Niekerk is,
Yeah. And then there's needle weaving, which is something that I had never done.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, this is like visions of our last conversation with warp and weft, because what she kind of made this up on her own. It sounds like she wanted to create a kind of a woven pattern, and she thought it would be fun to do tartan. So she went and found a tartan scarf in her drawer and recreated that pattern using thread.
Mm.
So what she does is she creates her warp threads by just doing long stitches over the shape, whatever it happens to be. And then the weft is weaving into those warp threads.
Uh-huh.
And so it might be over one, under two, over one, under two, all the way across. Then you go back to the other side and you might do over two, under one, all the way across.
Yeah.
And just alternate those, you know, so that, and you change the thread color, and that's how you get your pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are several different versions of needle weaving patterns in the design. And then there were surface stitches, surface embroidery stitches. So long and short. And she has her own way to do long and short, which was made a whole lot of sense. And I've done a whole lot of long and short years ago when I did, all I did was crewel embroidery for a while. So, you know, that wasn't really anything new, except that she has a little slightly different method for doing it than what I learned, which I think hers is going to be easier when it comes right down to it.
Oh, okay.
And some other stitches like drizzle stitch. Do you know what that is?
Nope. That's a new one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never done it before, but it's in Sue Spargo's stitch book. She does a lot of crazy quilting and wool applique embroidery, and this is one of the stitches that she uses. You stick, you pull the thread up through the fabric, and then you take your needle off and stick the needle back up you stick the needle down so that the sharp end is pointing down. And then you cast on a series of stitches. So basically what you're doing is kind of making a little loop and wrapping that loop around the needle. And that was like, my brain doesn't want to do this. She's given us access to all of her videos. And I know I'm going to be watching the video for that one, because that movement isn't natural to me. If you're a knitter, it's like casting on for knitting.
Okay.
And so you do however many of those you want. And then you hold on to those stitches that are on the needle and pull the, you have to thread the needle again. So you thread the needle and then pull the needle down through the drizzle stitch. We put a bead on the end of it, and it leaves this little caterpillary thing kind of sticking up off the fabric.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's a good thing to use for the center of a flower or something like that. If you want some texture, something that sticks up. Let's see. We did bullion knots, and it's just a little different way to do those. And lazy daisy stitch, and, you know, kind of the typical surface embroidery stitches. What's interesting is that she does some of the, I think it's one of the needle, some of the needle weaving, or maybe it's couching stitches over the long and short.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there are some, I think they're leaves that she does this with. I don't think she did it with any of the petals. I think they're all leaves, where there's, you know, two or three different colors of green and maybe a cream and then a little bit of pink at the very edge of the leaf. And then she laid stitches over that and couched them down in a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's an open pattern, so you still see the color underneath. But when I was looking at the picture ahead, you know, in advance, that was one of the things that struck me, was how did she get those colors in that leaf and then, you know, have this other pattern over it? Well, it's a layered stitch.
Oh.
You do one thing and then you do another thing on top of it, which is like Gay Ann Rogers all over, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
So it was a really, really good class. I'm really glad I took it. I learned a lot. Now I just have to practice a lot before I am comfortable starting on the actual piece itself.
Right, right. Yeah, layered stuff. Gay Ann, there's so much you can get out of that. I mean, it makes it a more complex piece, mm-hmm. but it's a whole different level of texture, feel, everything. Yeah. So, I enjoy Gay Ann for that.
Yeah.
Because you think, all right, I stitched that area. No, you didn't. You're not even close. You got a couple more things to do. Yeah. Yeah. So what was that like? Because you know, a lot of people have done, especially in the past couple of years, Zoom classes where you're just sitting at home. So basically you were kind of a hybrid class because you had a bunch of people in the room. Mm-hmm. I got to believe that was maybe better than sitting at home in that there was opportunity for interaction and helping each other. And
right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I think so. Hazel said more than once that she felt bad that she couldn't walk around and look at people's work and help them individually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people could ask her questions from the Zoom audience and we were talking in the classroom and she could hear, you know, if somebody kind of asked a question, somebody else responded, then, you know, she would you know, ask if it was a question that she could answer, you know, or whatever. And they had a way for her to be able to see what people were doing by using WhatsApp. Have you heard of
it? I've heard of it. Yeah, I actually have a WhatsApp account. I never use it, but yes, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's apparently really popular in other countries. I don't think we use it.
Everywhere but the U.S., yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had the two women that organized this and set everything up did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Ann Hansen and Jamie Randall. They had a tablet there that was already set up to call Hazel on WhatsApp. And so if somebody needed her to see what they were doing in our classroom, they could just call her on WhatsApp and then you put the piece, you know, so the camera can see it. You know, not as good as being able to pick it up in your hands and look at it closely. But it worked fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't, I think actually we only used it once.
Yeah.
In the classroom. But the people that were Zooming from home had questions and, you know, tried to hold their piece up to their camera, which is, you know, probably harder than the WhatsApp.
Right.
Or people could send her photos, you know, and she could, you know, give them, instruction or guidance,
yeah,
kind of offline. So and she's given us access to the class on her website basically forever. So that has, she used some different stitch diagrams that were in our book for the project.
Uh-huh.
And she has videos of all the stitches that she used, that she played while she was doing the teaching. And those are all in the online version of the class.
Uh-huh.
So she said, yeah, you can, you know, you got access to that, you know, virtually forever, as long as it's out, which is very generous.
So other than her not being there physically, you got really a full blown class then.
Yes.
That's great.
Now, I don't know what she does when she does a class in person, you know, because the standard model is the teacher sits down and everybody crowds around to see what they're doing while they demonstrate the stitch, which I've never liked.
Right.
And I mean, it's been a while since I've been to a seminar, so I don't know what teachers are doing other than I know Debbie Rowley switched to using a projector a long time ago.
Yeah.
So she could display what she was doing up on a screen and enlarge the stitch guide or run a video of the stitch or whatever, you know, which I think is way better. So I don't know if Hazel would have done that in a face-to-face class or if she would have defaulted back to the traditional.
Yeah.
Look over my shoulder while I do it.
Yeah. No, I know, Kathy.
Yeah, I think that slows the class down.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, especially if you've got, well, 25 people in the class are not going to be able to see what she's doing at once.
No, and if you're in the back row, yeah, you miss out. Yeah.
Or they have to do it, you know, 5 or 6 times.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I know Kathy Andrews got a camera, so she didn't have to do that. And she has said more than once that was game changing in terms of her class, because she could demonstrate and everyone could see equally. And I'm pretty sure Natalie Dupuis does the same kind of thing.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it takes one more piece of equipment, but yeah, I would agree with you. Game changing in terms of a class, live or online, mm-hmm. because yeah, everybody hovered around trying to see is just never going to be
right
effective. No.
And these days, people don't want to be that close to other people.
No. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, another fallout of the pandemic. Yeah, personal distance. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, so that worked out as well as it could. I mean, that was a big deal to have her all the way from South Africa. The original plan was she was going to be here in the States and be able to do classes throughout the country.
Right.
And but it sounds to me like through the efforts of those ladies who put it together, you guys got everything but her being in the room.
Right. And she was going to do that was how she was going to do her other classes, too. I don't know how many different classes she had scheduled, but she was doing all of them by Zoom.
Yeah. OK. Excellent. Well, that's because that's one teacher, one designer that I think if you have a chance, I had a chance and didn't, but certainly want to make your best shot at that because, she's just one of those top level designer teachers that, I'm sure you got not only in terms of the design and the stitching itself, but I'm sure there was much more that came out of that for you that just being in the presence of Hazel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good, and I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah, cool stuff. That was an EGA thing. Yeah, because that she was here. That was right. That was a result of she was originally going to be here for the EGA national seminar. So that blew up too. Boy,
right.
All for a piece of paper. Yeah.
She never said. In our group or, in her emails, why it didn't come through, but, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure she applied for it in plenty of time, but who knows?
Yeah.
Pandemic probably.
Right. Yeah. That's just it. Yeah. She may have applied for it in plenty of time and needed to double the time and found out after the fact. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, last time we talked, I meant to get to your state fair experiences and your entries. So you entered because you guys kind of, it sounds like your own little club, your only little state fair club, but what you had several entries, right?
I just had two this year.
Oh, okay.
I did another set of those little paper, perforated paper ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
These were my design this time. And then I entered stratigraphy, which is the, that was a framed piece. It was the 2021 ANG Stitch of the Month project.
Okay.
Designed by Jennifer Riefenberg.
Mm.
And it is, like layers of soil. That's why she called it stratigraphy.
Yeah.
And she actually did, she clearly knows a little bit about geology. She dropped one section of the row and raised another section of the row. And I don't know which is which. One is called a horst and the other is called a graben. I know enough geology about that to know that, but I don't know which is which.
I'm impressed already.
What that did was, so each month was a new stitch or series of stitches in a row across. And there were 46 rows, I think. So actually in some months, really in every month, you did more than one row, but there was just a new stitch each month.
Uh-huh.
For one of the rows that you did. So I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting idea and I liked the whole premise of it, but she did it in kind of grays and browns, like soil, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And, you know, the colors didn't really grab me. But when I was reading through the first, through January, kind of towards the end, she said, if you wanted to, you know, you could use the U.S. Geological Survey colors for the different eras and periods of history. And that kind of lit the light bulb. And she had a picture of it. So, you know, starting with, I don't remember what it started with, but, you know, like we're talking like Cretaceous and can't even remember all of them.
Pleistocene I don't know them all, but yeah.
Right. You're right. Exactly. And so I went and found a better color chart of it is specifically the U.S. Geological Survey, because everybody else in the world has eliminated, I think it's tertiary, that is now something else. But, you know.
Hey, it's science. It changes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But U.S. government stuff doesn't change.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So they use,
heaven forbid we would do that. Yeah.
Right. And it's not just one color for each era. There's several colors that kind of range, you know, that might be a fairly narrow range from like a blue to a green, or it could have several different colors in the range. And I don't know why they do that. I didn't read anything about it. I just found a good color chart. And then I went through my stash and pulled out everything that I had that would fit in the colors that they suggested for each range.
Yeah.
And so the other thing is that one of the other members in my ANG chapter decided she wanted to do it too. So she went through her stash, which isn't as big as mine, but we came down to my mom's house and threw all the threads on her dining room table, and they covered her dining room table.
Oh my.
That's what came out of my stash. So Robin Rossignol was down here the same day that we were going through that. And she just burst out laughing when she walked in and saw that table piled high with threads. But anyway, so I finished it, but I went a little extra stuff with it, and I titled it Geologic Eras, I think is what I titled it.
Uh-huh.
I just did that in backstitch, and along the side I put the symbol for each era at the top of where the whatever the color was, and then I put a legend down at the bottom, because some of them don't make sense, like Cretaceous is K.
Oh, okay.
And there's, you know, some of them make sense. Jurassic is J. Triassic is tertiary. I think it's tertiary is T. Triassic, they can't use T because they already used it for something. So the Triassic is a symbol that's a T with like an R tacked onto the stem of the T.
Okay.
So that's, you know, it looks, I meant it to look like an illustration out of a textbook.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I achieved that, but I got second place on both of them.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
It wasn't like they threw you out of the state fair, so there you go. Yeah. So basically you had a band sampler of these things, different stitches and different colors, or?
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly what it is, a band sampler.
Yeah.
Well, but there's cool. No spaces between the bands. They're all jammed together.
But using the U.S. Geological Survey as your color chart.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we know anybody after you who wants to do that, that the colors are still the same. So no doubt about that. Yep. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So 2 second places, and you guys spend time there during the day, or?
So Robin and I went the last Sunday of the fair, and she taught a make it, take it class, which was a little perforated paper Christmas ornament. And then we just, she only had one person for the morning and one person for the afternoon. So she didn't really need help from me. But, the rest of the time we just kind of sat there and answered questions. We had, one woman and her daughter came up to us and was asking about, they had several people entered full coverage pieces in the cross stitch.
Oh.
And so they were asking about those, you know, is part of that painted or, you know, we're going, no, it's all cross stitch. It's one X over every intersection.
Let me guess their reaction.
Yeah, they didn't really believe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't get, I mean, they're not real far away. Probably the farthest away is maybe 6 feet. But you can't really get up close to it to really see most of the things because they obviously don't want people touching them.
Right.
And we had people asking if the things were for sale.
Jeez. Yeah.
And of course, you know, the answer is you wouldn't want to pay what
right.
they're worth anyway, but no, they're not for sale.
You can't afford them. Trust me.
And then we just stayed. They actually, because we were there all day long, they let us pick our things up at when the Varied Industries building closed at 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
So that was the last Sunday at the fair.
Yeah.
We stayed and picked our stuff up that night, so we didn't have to come back on Monday to do that.
Oh, well, that's good. Save us a trip. Yeah.
We picked up stuff for, we took pieces for several other people in our chapter when we dropped things off. And so we had several people that we had to pick things up for.
Yeah. Yeah.
But our chapter did really, really well.
Oh, yeah.
One of our members had never entered the fair before, and she probably entered, I don't know, 10 or 15 pieces. And she won best of show, a first place and a best of show in the counted thread category.
Wow.
And Robin had a whole bunch of stuff in needlepoint, and she won first place and best of show in needlepoint.
Wow.
And there was a series of other colors of ribbons between those two especially, but other members of our chapter as well. So
wow, that's great. Something to celebrate there. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we said that we lived up to our name because our chapter is the Blue Ribbon Chapter.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah. Self-implied pressure there. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That name was chosen, you know, after many of us had been entering things at the state fair for years and won a lot of blue ribbons.
Oh, okay.
It's already justified.
Was it here now as the pandemic loses some of its steam? Were there a lot of entries?
The needlework was a little more than last year.
Okay.
But that might be because Robin and Ruth entered. Robin hadn't been entering for a while. And Ruth had never entered before, so they both had quite a lot to enter. And there's no limitation on the only limitation on entering something in the fair is there's two. You have to have made it yourself, and it can't be something you can't have entered it before.
Okay.
In the state fair. So they don't care if you did it in 1979. If you've never entered it in the fair before, you can put it in now.
Yeah.
That's, you know, Ruth kind of went through all of her, she'll probably be entering multiple things for several years to come.
She has a backlog, huh?
She has a backlog. Yeah.
That's great. I mean, it's, you know, it's a good thing. Do you feel like do they have skilled judges? I always wonder about the judge thing. They just drag someone off the street or they get people who actually know what a needle and thread is?
I think they don't tell you who the judge is.
Yeah.
I think they use shop owners.
Oh, okay.
So yes, they know what a needle and thread is.
Well, yeah, that would work. Yep. So much of that stuff is volunteer work, you know, and.
Right. Well, and I think that at times in the past, they've had an EGA or ANG certified, probably EGA certified judge because they don't have an ANG chapter in Des Moines. But, you know, they're expensive.
Sure.
And I don't think we have any in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I don't know where they, you know, they'd be coming from. I don't know how far away. So obviously, you know, a state fair isn't going to spend that kind of money on needlework.
Right.
You know, they might do that to judge the cattle.
Oh, I'm sure they would. Yeah.
or any of the animals they do.
Yeah.
But they're not going to do it for needlework. I don't know who judges the quilts. My guess again is that it's probably shop owners.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, you know, the shop owner, that's it, you know, at least it's somebody who's seen a lot of stuff, knows what good stitching from bad stitching and that kind of thing. You know, that's for a state fair, it seems like a minimum thing and sounds like fun. I've never done it.
Yeah, it is fun. And, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, and I think it's important to support the fair by doing that. It's people see things they've never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, if it encourages somebody to go out and, you know, try to find one of those full coverage pieces, you know, I think we did our job.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. One or two converts worth the trouble. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Yay for you guys.
Thanks.
Man, that's a haul. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Big celebration there at the next meeting. Yep.
Yes, and that's coming up. We're going to do a state fair recap.
There we go. Yep. Everybody applaud each other. That's great. Yep.
Why not?
Yep.
Definitely.
All right. We're going to call it there. Join us tonight for the Stitch Hour, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and Michael Cook and Raising Silkworms on Sunday. One fascinating conversation, and plus the guy's just a blast to talk to. So that was good. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.